I'm going to read four poems that have been inspired by Japanese art in the Metropolitan Museum of Art's collection. I ran across these pieces, actually all collected for me, in the Art and Engagement book that the Metropolitan produced in 2001 that was edited by Barbara Ford. Using this book for a year and meditating a bit on many of the pieces in there, I ended up with a book-length manuscript of poems, which is going to be called Autumn Grasses and will be published in 2003 by Louisiana State University Press. The first two poems in the four that I'm going to read are persona poems. The speaker in the first poem, Next Morning Letter, is a young woman dressed in a magnificent kimono with magnolias all over it and clematis blossoms. And the poem brings to life the old tradition in ancient Japan of sending a next morning letter to the lover you've just left, from whose bed you've just crept at dawn. Next Morning Letter. Savoring each summer moment lush and brief, I close my eyes to see your white robe falling open as you call for your scroll, an inkstone, a brush. As your brush passes over the paper, my body shivers. How closely now you watch at the open lattice as your servant hurries away, the next morning letter gracefully tied to a spray of clematis whose blossoms will not open until they reach me. In the wash basin, your face is the bridge that spans the floating world of dreams. Now you are yawning. Now you are reciting sutras, bowing to the wind. When the letter arrives, all the leaves of the maple outside my window are stirred. I read your words just once, then once again, bringing my fingers to my lips, my hair tucked back behind one ear. On the dawn's trellis, the scent of clematis. Now smell your fingers. The petals of my body gather in your empty arms. How shall I respond? The cry of the stag is so loud, the echo answers from the empty mountains as if it were a doe. I tell you only what you know. Clematis, the scent of your teaching surrounds me. My empty arms fill. Come night, the fragrant petals fall in a heap at my feet. This was based on a hanging scroll that was painted by Kegetsudo Doshin. The next poem is called Drifting Boat, and it's spoken by a character in The Tale of Genji by Murasaki Shikibu. Her name was Iukifune, and she was kept in an isolated house where she was the lover of one prince and became, through a kind of hoax, the lover of another man, and it was a very complicated story, and I'll refer you to Murasaki. This is just a moment. This one is based on an album leaf that was done in ink and color with gold on paper in the Edo period. Drifting Boat. During the banquet, what poem can I say for him as the wine cup comes floating by on the winding waters? I am not stone in the garden, nor an oak, nor a stalwart line of night mooring rocks, not a ship held at anchor, nor the treasure sought at sea. I am what it means to wander, ukefune, a boat long adrift in the sound of dark water. Outside the house at Uji, where I have been put, I hear rain-swept hills calling and the cry of deer, the rush of water falling and the slow tolling of a bell. Who is it that hears? So smoothly glides my boat, that were I to merge with the winter sea, would there be any ripple? Snow falls on cedars. Snow melts from the bough also. Who is it that hears the torrential ebb and flow in the heart, in wine, in snow? The speaker of this poem, Summer Birds and Flowers, is just someone looking at a scroll by Shikibu Terutada from the 16th century. It's called Summer Birds and Flowers. Unrolling the coiled scroll enacts the momentary sweeping down the midday sky of small birds on a draft from the distant blue ravines and mountain ridges into the windy clearing of summer's middle distance, so luminous and near it's hard to see. Elegantly disguised by graceful hollyhocks and stalks of amber iris that steeply lean into the emptiness that borders the tended garden path. Any fear of what imperils and impends is tempered, so that the tidal and jagged line of the far mountains seems merely an artful mapping of the bird's arc of flight. And such a glimmer of gaiety as they dip and swoop with unguarded ease into the inseparable immensity. My heart stops now as I think of it. The last poem is called Foxfire at the Changing Tree. There's a lot of folklore about foxes in Japan, and they are wily critters indeed. And rather than being worshipped at shrines, as some people think, people go to shrines to offer offerings to foxes so that they'll stay away from them and not bother them. In the new year, the foxes take on the stolen forms of pious pilgrims and go to the shrines themselves. This is based on Ando Hiroshige's drawing of this event called Foxfire at the Changing Tree on New Year's Eve. And the poem simply called Foxfire at the Changing Tree. The burning that must have been coming from me. These are lines I am stealing from someone else's poem. Just after I've resolved not to lie, not to steal, to live in my evergreen integrity as long as I can manage it. I'm much like these foxes gathered on a night whose stars might be flakes of snow. They have their burning torches to lift and bear down the road, fully camouflaged once they've put on the stolen forms of pious pilgrims. The bare-spreading tree above them is fit for owls to inhabit when a savory hunger makes them take deadly aim on any small rustle in the dry leaves. That's their true nature, however haunting their melancholy cries. But the foxes, for the love of me, and it's exactly that, I can't see why I shouldn't want to touch them, stroke them. I might just rub the ruddy silk of their coats against my cheek. And often have, you tell me bluntly, that friction, however slight, sufficient to make me spit fire, gnash my teeth, and lunge for the soft parts of your body, lifting my chin moments after to say hotly, "I didn't mean to, I didn't see it coming." As if I were the innocent one, blindsided, bloodied.